breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, warmer from the low. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to be joined in segment number two by one of our good friends, Ben Wilson, who does such great work here at VSiN. His play-by-play work is second to none as well. We have to talk about the fact that the Milwaukee Brewers finally had that long win streak busted up, but what do we make out of them? Does this team have the potential to have this not just be a nice August story, but to be able to make a run in October and perhaps win their first World Series in franchise history? We're also going to be talking about the overall league-wide landscape with him as well, how open this playoff season is probably going to be. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Monday as we touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters CM, naming does not matter, so per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter/X questions, everything is powered by EdgeBoost. EdgeBoost is making sure that bettors are able to access their funds whenever and wherever they want. EdgeBoost makes sure that 100% of gambling transactions do get approved. And when you go to EdgeBoost.bet, put in that promo code of Greg, G-R-E-G. That'll get you a dollar-for-dollar match on your first deposit up to $25. Now let's take a look back at everything that we saw in baseball on Sunday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Your top over team in all of baseball played another over, but it was overwhelming for them as the Walker Texas Rangers get a 10-4 win over the Blue Jays. Nathan Eovaldi back to looking like the Nathan Eovaldi that we all know and love. 2 runs allowed in 7 innings. Now he did give up a pair of solo home runs. Flagler Jr., 21st home run of the campaign, and don't call his name, Alejandro Kirk, 9th home run of the season, but much better than Jose Barrios, who gave up 6 runs in 4 1/3 innings, including a pair of bombs, as Marcus Semien, 15th home run of the season, and then Corey Seager, 18th home run of the season. Later on, Wyatt Langford, 17th home run of the season off of Braden Fisher, and then you off of Louis Varland. Evan Carter gets his 5th home run of the season for Varland, gives up 2 runs in his ending of work. Uriel Rodriguez, Brandon Little, both had a scoreless ending in Mason, Florida, pair of outside the bullpen scoreless, but Fisher gives up 2 runs in his inning work, and for the Rangers, he did have 2 runs given up in a third of an inning by Hobie Milner, as Milner does give up a home run to George Springer, 19th home run of the season, but he had from there Sean Armstrong, Cole Wynn get the final 5 outs of the game scoreless. For the Miami Marlins, they go on the road and they get the job done against the Boston Red Sox 5-3 to avoid that sweep. Jansen Junk, he did not live up to his aim. 3 runs allowed in 7 innings. Not great, not terrible. Does allow a home run to Wilder Abreu, wild out for his 22nd home run season. And Garrett Crochet did his part. He gave up a solo home run over the course of 7 innings as he was taken deep by one Mr. Eric Wagaman, 7th home run season. But then you had a pair of home runs. Jacob Marcy, he was able to get his 4th home run season. And then Dane Meyers, his 6th home run season. That comes off of Greg Weisert. For Weisert, he gives up 2 runs over the course of a third of an inning. Garrett Whitlock gives up a run in an inning, and then Steven Matz, pair of outs out of the bullpen, he gave up that home run as well. And for the Miami Marlins, you had Tyler Phillips and Anthony Bender lend a scoreless inning. For the Atlanta Braves, they rally from down by a count of 4-1 to take down the Cleveland Guardians by a count of 5-4. Eric Fetty Wap got whopped once again. 4 runs allowed in 4 innings. He has now allowed at least 3 runs in 9 straight starts, but the bullpen from there was flawless. Dylan Lee, Pierce Johnson, Raisio Iglesias, a scoreless inning. Aaron Bummer, 2 scoreless innings. And Jerickson Profar off of Nick Enright, his 7th home run season. Enright gives up those 2 runs in 1 1/3 innings. Logan Allen, not too long for this game. 3 walks, 3 runs allowed in 4 2/3 innings, but hurt by a pair of Anel Martinez errors, so only one of those runs was earned. Tim Aaron, Hunter Gaddis, Kate Smith, all on the scoreless inning, but Guardians now 63-60, and they need to try to keep pace in that American League wildcard picture, as a team that's looking to keep pace with regards to the NL West is the LA Dodgers, and they help their cause. They complete the sweep over the San Diego Padres, 5-4 the finalists. They put up 4 runs in the first inning, and then they would not score until the 8th inning, as Yu Darvish gives up 4 runs in 4 innings, including a pair of home runs, as Freddie Freeman has 15th home run season, and then Andy Paz is 20th. Mookie Betts has been having a rough season off of Robert Suarez, 13th home run season. Suarez has actually been having a little bit of a rough time in that bullpen, gives up a solo home run. It is inning work, but Jason Adam, a scoreless inning, Jeremiah Estrada, Adrian Moreno, Rodon combined for two scoreless innings and Ramon Laureano. Second home run, I believe, of the series off of Tyler Glasnow. 19th home run season. Glasnow was fine. Two runs allowed over the course of five innings. Bullpen had their issues. Alexis Diaz gives up a run in a third of an inning. Anthony Banda gives up a run in third of an inning. But yeah, Alex Vesia give you five outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Ben Kasparis, pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. And Blake Treinen, a scoreless inning. So Dodgers back out in front in the NL West. And the Giants are way back in the NL West. But you know what? They do get the job done over the Tampa Bay Rays, 7-1. And the Rays are well below 500, and things have really toilet bowled ever since a good start to the season. Ryan Pepiot gives up four runs in 5 2/3 innings. Mason Englert, he gives up a pair of home runs, three runs in total over the course of two innings as going deep for the San Francisco Giants. Tyler Fitzgerald, his fourth home run season, and home run number one for Drew Gilbert. So, yay, barely there from there. Mason Montgomery and out of the bullpen scoreless. And for Logan Webb, he continues to be masterful at home. Seven scoreless innings. Tristan Beck from there gives up a run in an inning. And Keaton Wynn was able to give you a scoreless inning for the win. And the Arizona Diamondbacks, well, they took the loss against the Colorado Rockies. 6-5, the final as for the Colorado Rockies. They were down in this game by a count of 4-1. It was looking relatively rough as Nabil Crismet, he actually got the start and he gave up one run in five innings. He was very solid. From there, the Woodford, Jake Woodford, five outs out of the bullpen, allows four runs. Juan Murillo and out of the bullpen, and then Jalen Beeks gives up a run in an inning for the Diamondbacks. Pair of home runs as off of one Mr. Peralta, you had Lourdes Gurriel get his 16th home run season. Corbin Carroll, his 27th home run of the season, as Antonio Senzatella actually pitched five scoreless innings. From there, Luis Peralta gives up those two home runs. Three runs in total, doesn't get a single out of the bullpen. Duggar Darnell was able to give you an inning out of the bullpen. He allows a run. Juan Mejia gives up a run in an inning, but Anthony Molina, Jimmy Harrigan, they both end a scoreless inning. So, win number 35 of the season for the Colorado Rockies achieved there. We'll talk more about this team with our good friend Ben Wilson in a few minutes, but the Brewers, their 14-game win streak comes to an end. 3-2 the final as they did their best to be able to claw their way back. William Contreras, with the team down 1-0 in the ninth inning, goes deep. 13th home run of the season. That was a two-run shot. The Reds would add on a run in the ninth inning to be able to force extras as Jose Quintana, really good start, 6 1/3 innings, allows one run. Tobias Myers gives up an unearned run in his two innings of work as he was hurt by a Bryce Rang fielding error. And then Grant Anderson gives up the unearned run in the 10th inning as Austin DeSay's kid walk-off single as for the Reds. This was a really good start for Andrew Abbott. 7 scoreless innings. From there, Emilio Pagan does give up that home run to Contreras. 2 runs a total in an inning. Tony Santian, Graham Ashcraft, they're both able to lend 8 scoreless innings. And a lot of scoreless innings given out by the Orioles, who they take down the Houston Astros 12-0 as for Dean Kramer, 7 scoreless innings. Grant Wolfram, Corbin Martin, they both give you a scoreless inning. And for the Orioles, only one home run in this game. Jordan Westberg, 15th home run season. Christian Javier was dealing with a little bit of an illness. Gave up one run in three innings, but had to depart early. And the bullpen from there just absolutely lit this game on fire. Jordan Weems gives up a 5 spot in a third of an inning. Aniel De Los Santos, pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Chaz McCormick, seen twice in this series, scoreless inning. Caleb Bort gave up 2 runs in an inning. Sean Dubin gave up 4 runs in his inning of work, including that home run to Westberg. And Stephen Okert, 2 scoreless innings. You did have the Royals play yet another under. They have been one of your best under teams in all of baseball. How about 53 overs, 69 unders, and 2 pushes? They take down the Chicago White Sox by a count of 6-2 as Davis Martin, 6 scoreless innings, and then the bullpen lit it up from there. Jordan Leisure, Leisurely gives up a solo home run in a third of an inning. Grant Taylor, 3 runs given up in an inning. Stephen Wilson gives up a home run, 2 runs in 2/3 of an inning. Going deep for the Royals, Adam Frazier, 5th home run season. Jonathan India is 8th as Ryan Berger gives up 2 runs, one of which was earned. He did give up a solo shot to Lennon Sosa, 16th home run season, but bullpen from there does their part. Sammy Long, Lucas Edge, Carlos Acevis, all lend a scoreless inning, and Anel Zerpa was able to give you a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless as well. And then for the Minnesota Twins, Chris Paddock, he was unable to get revenge on his old team. 8-1 the final as for Paddock gives up 8 runs in 5 2/3 innings, including a trio bombs. Going deep for Minnesota, Byron Buxton, 25th home run season, Royce Lewis his 6th, and then Brooks Lee is 12th as for Thomas Hatch, solid start here. 1 run allowed in 5 innings. Michael Tonkin, Cole Sands, Genesis Cabrera, Erasmo Ramirez, all in a scoreless inning. And you did have Bailey Horn give you 2 1/3 inning scoreless for the Detroit Tigers, but way too little, way too late there. And for the Chicago Cubs, they persevere against the Pirates. Wasn't easy, but 4-3, they take him down as Carmen Maladzinski. 1 unearned run given up in his 4 innings of work. From there, Andrew Heaney had the bullpen, and Colin Holderman, they both give up a run in 2/3 of an inning. Chase Shogart, 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless, but Isaac Manson gives up a run in an inning. And for Pittsburgh, they go 3-13 with Ben in scoring position as they got to Javier Assad a little bit, but only gives up 1 run in 4 innings. From there, you did have Taylor Rogers give you a scoreless inning. Ben Brown, in long relief. Two runs allowed in 2 2-thirds innings, but Andrew Kittredge had scoreless inning, Caleb Theobar in and out of the bullpen scoreless, and then you did see the New York Yankees take it to the St. Louis Cardinals. This by a count of 8-4 as Cardinals offense starting to get online. They were able to get to Will Warren for 3 runs, one of which was earned in 4 2/3 innings from their Devin Williams in and out of the bullpen scoreless. But Camilo Duval, he's had some struggles with the Yankees. He gives up a home run in 1 3rd innings as Yoel Pozo gets his 5th home run in season. These guys were all better than Jojo Romero, though, who gave up 4 unearned runs in 2/3 of an inning, was hurt by Thomas Seguisi's 2 errors out there in the field, Ori Alcala, and out of the bullpen squirrels. Riley O'Brien, 5 outs out of the bullpen squirrels, and Miles Michaelis, he walked 5, gave up 3 runs in 5 innings. Not Miles Michaelis-like, but Kyle Leahy, he gets 4 outs out of the bullpen, he allows a run, and for the New York Yankees, they find a way to persevere with Tim Hill giving a squirrel setting, and Luke Weaver, 5 outs out of the bullpen, he was able to get a W, and this was a W for the LA Angels. As in extra innings, they persevere over the Athletics, as this was a game that was wild, that was crazy, and for the Angels, Jose Soriano gives up 5 runs in 5 2/3 innings. He had allowed 1 home run on the road all season. He gives up a trio of them in this one. Nick Kurtz, 25th home run season. Jay Langelier's 26th home run season. Lawrence Butler is 17th. And for Jeffrey Springs, he gives up 5 runs in 4 2/3 innings, including a home run to Joe Adell, 26th home run season. From there, Tyler Ferguson, 4 outs out of the bullpen squirrels. Oswaldo Beto, Elvis Alvarado, Sean Newcomb, they all give you a squirrel inning. But then Michael Kelly and Ben Bowden, they light things up in the 10th inning. And for the LA Angels, Brock and Roll Birkin out of the bullpen squirrels. Reed Detmers and Luis Garcia combined for 2 scoreless innings. Kenley Jansen from there was able to force things into the 10th inning, and then the Angels persevere from there. And if you're taking a look at what we're all getting trend-wise in Major League Baseball right now, it has been an underwhelming season with regards to totals thus far this season, and we've been seeing that over the last 7 days, with Sunday Night Baseball pending 46 unders to 41 overs, and Moneyline favorites, they're hitting at about 53.5%, 48 and 42 on the money line over the last 7 days. Overall for the season, the under rate is just below 52%, 921 unders to 858 overs, while money line favorites hitting at about 57%, 1,047 and 793 on the money line. So that's where we're seeing in baseball right now, and that's where we're all getting trend-wise. Coming next, how about if we talk some Milwaukee Brewers, we talk about the playoff landscape, and so much more with Ben Wilson, who does such great work over here at VSiN, right here on the Baseball Betting Show, myself, Greg Peterson, now for the VSiN Family Podcast.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man, as he is a 5-tool utility man here at VSiN. Does a little bit of everything, including play-by-play work, whether that be in tennis, indoor football, college baseball, college basketball, you name it, he does it. He does so many of our live betting shows. He does so much of our late-night stuff, as well as we've got Ben Wilson aboard, a man that, much like myself, from the great state of Wisconsin. So who better to have on after the Brewers had a 14-game win streak? You're able to follow him on the old Twitter side checks at Ben and underscore his last name Wilson and underscore and then the number one all together. And Ben, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, absolutely. You know, tough that the winning streak finally came to an end, but I mean, I don't think anybody was expecting the Brewers to just never lose a baseball game. So kind of wild just how in and out here we are, Greg, in the aftermath of that streak. And I think the big question is, how do they handle kind of the come down from it? Because you got to turn around and play 5 games in 4 days against the Cubs, which will have mega implications here as far as the division goes.
Yep, absolutely. And I think the big question is, with the Milwaukee Brewers, can this be sustained into October? Because obviously this run was really, really nice, and we've been questioning this all season long. Ben, you've joined me quite a bit on this podcast. We've been taking a look and thinking, all right, can they be able to continue this? As of right now, do you think that this is something that might dry up a little bit in October, or do you think that this team can be powered to a deep run in October, unlike what we've seen over the last few years?
Yes, I mean, certainly as far as the pace they're on, which has been basically a 105-win pace, I don't see that continuing. And as far as the rest of the season goes, but they still are in a great position to host it, be in the divisional round, be in a position to host there. I really wonder, for me, it's sort of twofold. It's A, can you get Jacob Mizrowski kind of back to being in a sharp sort of form without totally going overboard as far as the innings that you're using out of him? Like, that's the big question for me as far as Mizrowski goes. And then also, can you, like, a lot of this is predicated on the pitching. So Freddie Peralta, who's really been a workhorse and has thrown a ton of innings, can you get him to a position where he's able, not necessarily to go much deeper in games, since that's been a struggle, but can you get him in a spot where you at least feel like he's relatively fresh going into this postseason run, along with a Brandon Woodruff, who continues to be, I'd say, of all these guys, Greg, he's been on the best form, best pace of anybody as far as working him up, coming back from the big injury he had. And he's even admitted he's not fully at 100% strength. But I look at those three factors kind of pitching-wise, and that, to me, will be the big difference maker going down the home stretch, because the hitting is what it is. I mean, they're not going to stop, you know, getting infield singles left and right and taking the extra base, and Christian Yelich, you know, continues to swing a good bat.
Coming back from down 8-1.
Yeah, seriously. So to me, it's more predicated on the pitching as far as will this actually be sustainable once we get into October.
Yeah, but I think that that's such a good point that you make. I do think that the pitching is going to be so, so important moving forward, as we do have Ben Wilson, who does such great work here at VSiN, joining me on the Baseball Betting Show. And how much do you think it is to the benefit of the Milwaukee Brewers that it's just flat out not an impressive year right now in Major League Baseball? It just feels like it's a very wide open in general. And typically with the Milwaukee Brewers, I'd say, all right, I don't know if they're going to be able to maintain in October, but I just don't see a team out there where it's like, oh, this team is head and shoulders best team in all of baseball. They're the team that's going to be able to take down the Brewers. And I think that the open nature of the team this of the entire league this year really helps out this team.
Yeah, and that's honestly the perfect elixir, right, for Milwaukee team. I mean, they needed it to be a season like this where there wasn't just an obvious divide and a delta between the haves and the have-nots. And certainly for, you know, the Brewers have, as far as you think about like their win equity going forward into some of these potential series. I mean, that's really, to me, where it starts, understanding, hey, you're going to be totally live. And the Dodgers, I don't think, scare anybody in the NL, not just the Brewers, but I think there's a bunch of teams who will look at a potential Dodgers matchup in the postseason and they go, oh, yeah, who really minds that sort of setup? It's by no means a bad setup to have once we get into the postseason. So it's got to play into it. And that also makes, like, where I look at the pitching, that always tends to be the great equalizer anyway in a lot of these playoff series. So that's kind of why it enforces that thought in my mind, Greg, even more, that if you're able to shore up some of those question marks, you feel even better about yourself going into the playoffs.
Yep, no question about it. I think that it's just such a great year for the Milwaukee Brewers to be able to make that run. And I think that that is going to be such a massive key for them moving forward, because I do look at that in National League, and I know that you just talked about the Dodgers, and I think that at full force, they're the biggest competition to the Milwaukee Brewers, but we just don't know if they're going to be at full force. And who do you think might be the biggest team that stands in their way, especially in the wake of the Zach Wheeler injury for the Philadelphia Phillies, which I think could loom very, very large for them?
It certainly could. I keep looking at some of these numbers on the Mets. I mean, plus 450 as we're talking to win the division. It's a team that has been playing awful baseball, like the anti-Brewers here in August. But at the same time, I mean, the talent on that roster is undeniable. You're also getting pitching reinforcements. You get the call up to Nolan McLean, who I covered in college when he was a hitter at Oklahoma State. Kind of wild to see him now as a pitcher at the big league level. But that's a team that I think there's, at a certain point, the buy low will make a lot of sense. And you're getting them, I think they're double digits in the 12-13-1 range right now to win the pennant. That's probably the team I honestly would have the most concern over, and is that recency bias because they are the ones who, you know, who knocked out the Brewers in the postseason last year? Maybe, but that all being said, like, the Mets are definitely going to be right there. It's just a matter of, can they come back, win the division, or will they just have to go through the wild card rounds? And then I'd probably put the Padres as a second fiddle team. It's like, as long as they aren't facing the Dodgers, they have this weird, you know, inferiority complex, it seems like, where the Padres just can't get out of their own way whenever they face the Dodgers. But in a non-LA series, you feel like San Diego always is a really dangerous group.
Yep, they certainly are. And I do think that that is such a great point that you bring up, as we do have Ben Wilson, who does such great work over here at VSiN, joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And I do think that with the Padres versus Dodgers dynamic, that's very interesting. And how about if we take a look at the American League as well? Because in order for the Brewers or anyone else to be able to win the World Series, they have to get through the American League. But I just look at these two leagues, and even though I think that they're both wide open, I think the talent in the National League is just way higher than that in the American League, because we just talked about who really scares you in the National League. It's even worse in the American League, with the Blue Jays right now owning that top record. The Astros have fallen straight down the toilet bowl. The Seattle Mariners are starting to surge, but they're an all-or-nothing team at the plate. I just don't know who necessarily is that team out there in the American League that scares you either, and that league actually feels even more open than the National League.
In total agreement with you, and that's where, you know, like, you think about, you know, the teams that you really trust in the AL. I mean, you go through it, and that's a dwindling list very quickly, isn't it, Greg? I mean, anybody right now in the AL wildcard race, I think of all those teams, like the Mariners, you probably feel the best about, but even them, like, what's the true ceiling for a team like Seattle? Like, everybody right now, from, you know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and we're talking right after they, you know, they blew another game today with the bullpen against the Marlins in the ninth. It's just not a collection of teams that you look at and go, okay, yeah, I can check off my list of all these teams that I'm feeling good about and feel confident in going into a playoff series. And that's, I think, the biggest reason why you have such a divide between what we're talking about with the haves and have-nots between the NL and the AL.
Yep, absolutely. And when it comes to those teams out there in the American League, is there one or two that actually stand out to you and you feel pretty good about them? Or are you sort of much like myself and you're just completely out on all these teams and you're wondering who's going to be able to make a run? Because I just am very baffled by this entire American League right now.
Still believe, especially if we boil it down to just particularly pitching, and I think that's why a lot of people have been really high on what Seattle can bring to the table. Like, I still like all the options. When you're talking, you got a Logan Gilbert, a George Kirby to at least, you know, start a sort of a rotation, and the sort of bullpen arms that have been proven guys this year for Seattle. I mean, that clearly has to make you feel good at the very starting point with how many question marks there are otherwise. I think it's just with Seattle. I mean, it's the lack of depth and consistency when it comes to hitting the ball, and how will that continue to develop? Can it be more than just a Cal Raleigh and Julio Rodriguez that are giving you consistent quality ABs? And at least if you can dumb it down and you at least just make it a pitching contest, and you figure all these games are going to be like 2-1, 3-2, you know, you'll take your chances with the Mariners, but that's probably as good of a feel as I can have right now for any one of these teams, with especially the division leaders. I mean, Tigers, Astros in particular, and I think nobody really truly believes the Blue Jays have that win equity to go ahead and win the pennant, but those two of the three division leaders have definitely been leaking a lot of oil here in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, they certainly have been, and it's been a lot of fun to be taking a look at that, because it's just been an interesting dynamic between those teams. And when it comes to just taking a look at baseball this time of year, are there certain teams that you'd like to be able to backslash fade a little bit more when we do get into the middle of August, into September, because now we're getting into prime form of baseball, and I just feel like the games, they become a little bit more heightened, a little bit more important, and we always see this every single year. There's some team that holds like a 5-6 game lead in the postseason, and they go straight down the toilet bowl, and they just completely blow their chance at being able to make the playoffs.
I think I probably look at the teams that have been sellers and then had maybe, we sometimes see this with teams, Greg, where you get the brief, a little bounce back, the buy on bad news, and the Diamondbacks sort of fit that mold where they had a good start post-trade deadline after they sold off a lot of guys. But I mean, if this weekend was any indication, the blown leads against Colorado, the total bullpen collapses, I just don't know what's left there. And that could easily be a team that, as we get into September, become a really good sort of fade material as far as the Diamondbacks go. That's the one that really kind of jumps out to me, because a lot of these other poor teams, they've been priced that way for months now by the market. So it's not like you're going to all of a sudden get a good price to fade them, because that's been how it is all year. But Arizona would be the one team, as I just think off the top of my head, kind of in an island in that regard of, you know, at least decent record, decent players, but they've sold off a lot of their top guys, and the bullpen is just a total mess as it stands.
Yep, it certainly is a total mess. And I mean, how about this team as well? Because I recognize that the Miami Marlins had a little bit of a rough go of it in their series against Boston Red Sox. They were able to pull off a win today, actually, in a Gregor Crochet start. And that's another team I look at that is not going to be able to make the postseason, but I've been finding myself betting on them quite a bit. And they feel like that pesky team that can make you quite a bit of money here in the month of August into September, because a lot of people think, oh, they're playing for nothing and everything like that, when this is a really young team that they're really looking to be able to build some momentum going into 2026 and beyond.
You are completely right as far as using the term pesky, and even some of their more unheralded pitchers, and like Jansen Junk has not been like a bad guy.
The opposite of his last name.
It's exactly. You would think the guy is just throwing Junk. Screwball after screwball, but no, it's not been the case. He handled himself really well in the start against Gerrit Crochet. So from that element of it, certainly I'm a believer, right with you, Greg, that Miami is definitely going to be a team. Like, I can totally see them rallying, finishing like 81-81, and that being a big point of pride for them as the year winds down.
Yep, no question about it. And in terms of the slate for Monday, we've got a lot of teams that are in action. Is there anything that you were taking a look at on the slate, or is it a little bit more of a wait and see for you at this point?
Still wait and see for me. I want to take a look at game two of that Brewers Cubs, especially after how the bullpens, how that looks, because the Brewers really were down to nobody in the Cincinnati game Sunday. Obviously wanting to prepare for the doubleheader Monday, but game two will be fascinating for me, Greg, just to see who is available, how both managers, Pat Murphy and Craig Counsell, handle that dynamic.
Yep, it is going to be very interesting because the Brewers played back-to-back games that went to extra innings, so that does hurt you quite a bit there. But a man that always helps us out on this show is you, Ben. You're such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to taking a look at this great game of baseball. So let the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yep, Ben underscore Wilson underscore the number one, and hey, I got play by play going as we speak. A lot of shows as well on VSiN, so a good time to be calling a lot of games and talking a lot of sports.
Absolutely. It is always a great time for that. And Ben, he's one of the best in the business. A big thanks to Ben for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I'll give you picks and analysis of every game on the betting board for this Baseball Monday as we touch them all.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lobby Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be able to get Ben Wilson aboard. He does such great work here at the network, taking a look at so many different things, whether that be football, baseball. His play-by-play work is truly second to none. Every single time he joins me, lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So big thanks to Ben for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Monday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at GUnit underscore 81. We are going to be going in Las Vegas Station, or this is where we go with the National League games first, then the American League games, any interleague games. Those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. Only time I'll be going out of order is for the Brewers versus Cubs double dip because, well, we've got two games and we got a few TBDs on that. So how about if we do get things started with 9-1, 9-2 on the card? The St. Louis Cardinals are on the road against the Miami Marlins as Eury Pérez is on the bump for the Fish and Matthew Liberatore is on the bump for St. Louis. St. Louis is an underdog of plus 115, minus 127, to minus 135. That number on Miami, it is totally over in the under, both at minus 110. And with the Fish, set them at a minus 128. Right now, I'm seeing a minus 127 out there. That's max I'd be willing to lay, but I'm willing to lay regardless. With St. Louis, they've been a bottom three offense in all of baseball in terms of run scoring since the beginning of the month of July. And for Eury Pérez, I know that he's experienced a little bit of regression recently. Nine total runs allowed on the road against the Cleveland Guardians and the Atlanta Braves. But I mean, this guy has been absolutely lights out when he has been at home thus far this season. His road ERA is a 4.42, and on the road for Eury Pérez, he's giving up over 1.5 home runs per nine innings. He has yet to give up a home run at home, 2.08 ERA, albeit only 21 and two-thirds innings at home, but I mean, he has been rock solid there. And then for Matthew Liberatore, I do think that he's doing for a little bit of positivity for the St. Louis Cardinals. He's got that 4.08 ERA, but he does a nice job of not beating himself. 0.9 home runs and 2.2 walks allowed per nine innings. His big issue has been the lack of deception, only getting about 6.8 strikeouts per nine innings, 4.08 ERA, 3.76 fielding independent. But I mean, both of these teams are backed up by solid bullpens. You're not going to consider either of them to be amazing, but for the Miami Marlins, the likes of a Ronnie Enriquez, Lake Bakar, Tyler Phillips, Kate Gibson, these guys have been able to give you a sub-350 ERA. They did have to use up Anthony Bender yesterday, but I mean, these guys have been solid. And for Miami, they've got some of the biggest home and road splits that you're going to find in all of baseball in terms of run scoring on the road for Miami. The team is in the top six with about 4.75 runs per game. Meanwhile, at home, 3.85 runs per game. The only team scoring fewer runs per game at home in the National League than Miami is right now the San Francisco Giants. You do have Augustin Ramirez, who's been able to supply the team with 18 home runs, only hitting about a 235, but he's been solid there. Roberto Hernandez has actually been really good for this team as he's hitting about a 280. You've had Xavier Edwards at the top hitting for a 300, and then obviously Kyle Sowers is leading the way. 25-plus home runs, over a 350 on base. He has been rock solid, but team is just doing a good job finding a way to move the line, though when you're in such a pitcher-friendly ballpark, that does hurt you quite a bit. And then for the St. Louis Cardinals, just a case where you haven't been able to get a lot of home run power, as Wilson Contreras has right now been leading the way for this team, as he's been able to supply you with about a 340 to a 350 on base. He's up to 16 home runs. But the younger guys have yet to be able to step up. Victor Scott, Lars Nootbaar, Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker, all these guys hitting in that neighborhood about a 225 to 235. You've been able to have Thomas Seguizzi be able to give you a little bit more. He's hitting about a 250, so that's been able to help you out. And Ivan Herrera, double-figure amount of homers. His on-base percentage hovering right around 366 is solid. But again, this is a relatively solid St. Louis Cardinals bullpen. Likes of Kyle Leahy, JoJo Romero, Riley O'Brien, Matt Svanson have been able to give you a sub-350 ERA. So I think that this is going to be a lower-scoring game. Maybe my total 7.9. I like the under. And for the Marlins, we'll go to a -127 on that money line. Now here comes a double dip, 903, 904 in conjunction with 925, 926. It is the Brewers on the road against the Cubs. It's TBD versus TBD in game number two. We're probably not going to know that until the AM. Now we do know that in game number one, it is going to be Freddie Peralta going for the Milwaukee Brewers. And we're thinking that Cade Horton is going to be going for the Chicago Cubs. That is yet to be confirmed. But if you do get Freddie Peralta going up against Cade Horton, I did set the Brewers at a -122 on the money line. I would be setting a total, by the way, of a 9.7, 9.5 or less in on the over at 10 or higher to the under. As for Cade Horton, if he does indeed get the start in one of these games, he's been a relatively solid pitcher, but I just fear that he's doing for a little bit of regression, because even though he does a good job of not hurting himself, he is a guy that does give up quite a bit of general contact. For Cade Horton, his last start came, I believe, 5 days ago. It came on the 13th, so this would be his time in the rotation. He has given up a grand total of one run over the course of his last five starts. I'm not quite sure how he's doing it. 7.1 strikeouts per nine innings, 370 ERA, 374 fielding dependent. Now, the reason why I did set such a high total, by the way, is that wind is going to be blowing out in Wrigley on Monday, and it's going to be blowing out pretty hard. This is not like your cheapo 5 mile per hour winds or anything like that. Like right now, I am seeing winds of between about 8 to 12 miles per hour. It's going to be a little bit more dull in game number two, but in game number one, it's really going to be whipping. So there's that. And for Freddie Peralta, he's doing for a little bit of regression as well. He has had himself a magical season, despite the fact that his strikeouts per nine rate is actually at a career low. He's right now getting 9.7 strikeouts per nine innings. He's still giving up 3.5 walks per nine innings, 290 ERA, 374 fielding dependent. And he's just gone out there and he's been able to get the job done. A combined 7 runs allowed over the course of his last 4 starts, albeit his last time against the Cubs, he did give up 5 runs, and you've got 2 really good offenses for the Brewers. They're averaging about 5.8 runs per game away from home. They finally have that long win streak snapped yesterday, but I mean, the way that Andrew Vaughn has stepped in and has been so good for this Milwaukee Brewers team, it's just absolutely maddening. In a Brewers uniform going into yesterday, Andrew Vaughn supplying 9 home runs in his first 109 at-bats with just below a 400 on base. Christian Yelich has obviously been leading the way in a power perspective, 345 on base, 25 home runs, but you just have everyone on this team moving the line. Like, and you just go down the list of guys providing at least a 330 on base. Blake Perkins, Caleb Durbin, obviously mentioned Vaughn and Yelich, William Contreras, Bryce Terang, Sal Frelick, all these guys, they just find a way on. And then for the Chicago Cubs, you do have a little bit more firepower. Say Suzuki, Pico Armstrong, both of these guys have been able to supply 27 home runs, so they both have been going a little bit cold recently. Miguel Amaya being on the injury list means you're seeing a little bit more. Carson Kelly has been able to give you a 364 on base. Michael Busch about a 340 on base. He's flying 24 home runs. Your main guy in terms of just finding a way on is Kyle Tucker, 375 on base, and he's been able to supply 18 plus home runs, really 1 through 9 with the way that Matt Shaw has been able to step up. Has been very fearsome, as Shaw had himself a really rough start to the season, but you look at what he's been able to do over his last like 75 or so at bats, 8 home runs and hitting above a 300, so I do think that you're going to get a high-scoring affair, especially with the Brewers' bullpen having to go to extra innings each out of the last 2 days, and it has been a really good bullpen with the likes of Nick Mears, Abner Uribe, Trevor McGill, so many guys being able to supply a sub-325 ERA, even Grant Anderson, that they had to use up yesterday. All these guys have been very rock solid in that bullpen, but they are heavily used. And for the Chicago Cubs, we've been seeing quite a bit of regression with regards to this bullpen as well, though you still do have quite a few guys that have gone out there, been able to get the job done for this team, the likes of a Caleb Theobar, Daniel Palencia, Brad Keller, these guys being able to give you a sub-325 ERA. I know that Chris Flexen has been quite rock solid for this team, but I think they DFA'd him, which was a little bit surprising. They made a little bit of room for Ryan Brazier, who's not been that great for this team. So do think that we're going to get a little bit of higher scoring affair, especially with the wind blowing up. We'll delay up to minus 121 with the Brewers on that game one. Plus 123 or higher, looking at the Cubs, and then 9.5 or less, looking at the over at 10 or higher to the under. Now, this is a big, giant game of mystery. Right now, the projected starters are Jameson Taillon going against Chad Patrick. Now, if you don't get Taillon and you get someone else for the Cubs, I probably would be saying the Brewers as a slight favorite, as I think that we should be getting Chad Patrick here, mainly because a lot of the longer guys had to be used in that series against the Cincinnati Reds, including Tobias Meyer, so that knocks him out for the start, but figuring we do get Chad Patrick against Jameson Taillon, minus 110 or better, we'll be looking at the Cubs, plus 112 or better, looking at the Brewers, and then set a total of 10.2 at 10 or less, we'll be looking at the over 10.5 or higher to the under. Wind will still be blowing on this game, but probably a little bit more calm than it would be in game number one, and if you do indeed get Chad Patrick, this would be his first start since the beginning of the month of July. They really just sent him down to the minor leagues. This was not like an injured list sort of situation. They were able to bring up Jacob Mizorowski, Brandon Woodruff got healthy, but when Patrick has been at the big league level, even though the record is 3-7, he's got a 3.52 ERA with a 3.56 fielding independent, 9 strikeouts, about 3 walks for 9 innings, so he's been relatively suitable, and he should be able to give you a good, presentable performance. And then for Jameson Taillon, this would be his first start in about a month or so, as I know that he spent a little bit of time on the injured list. He's been sort of up, down, all around. Just has not been a smooth season for him. 4.44 ERA. The big issue has been the depot, giving up 2.1 home runs per 9 innings. I know that he's made a few minor league rehab stints over at Iowa. 5.54 ERA there. So do think that he'll give up quite a few runs. If you don't get Jameson Taillon again, probably looking at a pick'em between the Cubs and the Brewers. If you do get Taillon, I'd be setting the Brewers up to a plus 112 is what I would need to take a shot on them. Minus 110 or better, we'll be looking at the Cubs in this ordeal. And then 10 or less, looking at the over 10.5 or higher to the under. Again, with a double dip and not knowing the starters, quite a bit of subject to change there. I've got my handicap spreadsheet link in the description in case of things change there. 9-5, 9-6 on the card. The LA Dodgers are on the road. They're facing off against the Colorado Rockies. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is on the bump for the Dodgers. Kyle Freeland goes for Colorado. Colorado does sign themselves as a pretty sizable underdog. Between plus 210 to a plus 231, and between minus 245 to a minus 260 is that number on the Dodgers. 7.5 is the total. The over is minus 120, and the under is even. And if you're looking to lay a run half with the LA Dodgers, currently that is a minus 164, and I'm willing to go up to a minus 193. I just have absolutely no reason to take the Colorado Rockies here. I recognize that for the LA Dodgers, things have not been as great for them offensively whenever Max Muncy has been out of the fold, but I do think that Yoshinobu Yamamoto is going to be able to continue to get this thing back online for the Dodgers, who looked solid in that weekend series against the San Diego Padres. For Yamamoto, he's been solid this year. He's had a few blow-up starts, including in his last start against the LA Angels, giving up 6 runs there, but I mean, for the season, for Yamamoto, 2.84 ERA, 3.07 fielding independent, as he's been able to get about 10.3 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's giving up only about 3 walks per 9, so he's been able to do a good job there. And then for Kyle Freeland, he should be doing for a little bit of positivity, but he just gives up way too much general contact, as Freeland does a solid job of actually not beating himself. 1.2 home runs, 2.3 walks allowed per 9 innings, but 6.2 punch-outs per 9 innings, so not a lot of deception there for Freeland. He's been a little bit better recently, a combined 12 runs allowed in his last 4 starts, and considering one of those games was a 20-1 loss, it actually wasn't really on him, so there's that aspect of things. But for the Colorado Rockies, even at home, they're only averaging about 4.5 runs per contest. That's a big, giant issue, as you've had Hunter Goodman be able to supply the team with 23 home runs. He actually has more home runs on the road rather than at home. Jordan Beck has been hitting above a 300 at home. Mickey Moniak, same for him as well. And for Mickey Moniak, he's been able to supply the team with 12 home runs when he's been at home as well. Tyler Freeman has been pretty solid in terms of finding a way to move the line, get on base. He's been able to about a 300 at home as well, but you do have these guys like in Orlando Arcia, Braxton Fulford, guys like this that are just giving you a big John nothing burger. Brenton Doyle's been better on him, but that's been an issue. Warming Venable has actually been really good since they called him up, but I mean, you've got a Colorado Rockies team that's also in the bottom 3 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Jimmy Erget has actually been pretty solid along with Victor Vodnik in the bullpen. Both of these guys are posting up a sub-4 ERA, but then you get into the likes of Nick Anderson, Jaden Hill, now that he's dealing with injury, but Seth Alverson, a whole bunch bunch of guys posting up above a 5 ERA on Elshavili. These guys have just not been amazing, and for the LA Dodgers, does feel like this bullpen is starting to get back online as you've been able to have this team overcome a lot of injuries. Now Brock Stewart is on the injury list, Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates are both out, but Alex Vesia, Jack Dreyer, both of these guys, a sub-325 ERA. Blake Treinen has been a little bit rough this season, but they get him off the injury list. That should be able to help out a little bit, and for the Dodgers, I mean, the Max Muncy injury does hurt this offense, but that's why you've got Shohei Ohtani giving you above a 375 on base with 43 home runs. Teoscar Hernandez doesn't necessarily hit for a lot of on base percentage, but hitting above a 250 with 18 home runs. Andy Paz is up to 19 home runs. Michael Conforto has had a miserable season, but Alex Call is giving you over a 340 on base. Mookie Betts needs to pick it up a little bit, but Will Smith over a 400 on base. He's able to get jiggy with it. I do think that the Dodgers get to Freeland and this bullpen, so set my total at 10.7. I like the over and the Dodgers on the run line. 9-7, 9-8 on the betting board. It is the San Francisco Giants on the road against the Slam Diego Padres as Nestor Cortes is on the bump for the Padres, and you got Mr. Robbie Ray saying hip hip hooray to give you another start. This game is presently off the board. I think that there's a little bit of TBD as whether or not Nestor Cortes was actually going to be able to make this start, but I've got my handicap set the Padres at a -133 on the money line. We'll go up to a -132 there, +134 higher. I'm going to be looking at the Giants and then made a total of a 7.2. So a 7 or less, I'm in on the over. A 7.5 or higher, we're going to be taking a shot on the under. When it comes to the San Francisco Giants team, they just have not been able to supply a lot of offense. 24th in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, albeit they are averaging over 4.6 runs per game away from home. One of the big things for this team has been the fact that they have not been able to hit at home, mainly because the ballpark is just not set up to be able to hit at home. But Rafael Devers hitting less than a 240 ever since he got to San Francisco. In his first 50 games, only 8 home runs. You just expect a lot more there. Jungle Lee is starting to get online, 325 on base. Aloy Ramos, 14 home runs, about a 340 on base. So, I mean, these guys have been able to do an okay job, but I mean, you've had Matt Chapman in and out of the lineup even when he's been in it, though he does have closer to about a 335 on base, hitting less than a 240. Willy Adames has been much better recently. Since the beginning of the month of July, he's been finally living up to that contract, but still, it has been a rough season for him. Overall, hitting about a 225 with 19 home runs again over the last 30 days, 17 home runs in his last about 105 or so at bats, so you will certainly take that, but up, down, all around, this has been a rough team. Tyler Fitzgerald hitting below a 225. Drew Gilbert has given you nothing whatsoever. And for the Giants, this continues to be the number two team in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. We should see a little bit of regression with that, with Eric Miller being on the injury list. You trade away Camilo Duval, Tyler Rogers, but Jose Buto, Joey Lucchese, Randy Rodriguez, these are guys that give you a sub-355 ERA, albeit Buto had a rough last series against the Tampa Bay Rays. And then on the other end, the San Diego Padres continue to be number one in all of baseball in terms of their bullpen ERA at a 298. So many guys, Jeremiah Estrada, David Morgan, Andre Amora Hone, Jason Adam, these guys being able to give you a sub-3 ERA. And for Nestor Cortes, overall this season is ERA is a 561, but in a small sample size with the San Diego Padres, 2 starts, 9 and a third innings, he's only allowed 3 runs. If you look at the minor league rehab starts they had made with the Milwaukee Brewers, he was looking like he was getting very much back online as well, so that should leave you very encouraged. Now for the Padres, you just need a little bit more oomph in this lineup. That's why you pick up Ryan O'Hearn, the Ramon Laureano pair of guys give you above a 340 on base. O'Hearn 14 total home runs this year, Laureano is up to 18, and Xander Bogaerts since the beginning of the month of July has been hitting darn near a 275, so that's been encouraging. Manny Machado 20 home runs, 355 on base. Fernando Tatis Jr. 370 on base. He's been stuck on 17 home runs for quite some time, but that said, with Robbie Ray, he's been pretty solid this year as well. 298 ERA, but that does come with a 373 fielding independent, as he is still giving up about 3.4 walks per 9 innings, only about 1 home run per 9 innings, so I mean, he's been able to do a relatively solid job there. But for Robbie Ray, he also has had a little bit more issue when he's been away from home rather than when he has been at home. For Mr. Ray, a 315 ERA on the road, and on the road he has been giving up closer to about 1.25 home runs per 9 innings. So -132 or better looking at the pods, +134 or better the Giants, and then 7 or less I'm in on the over, 7.5 or higher the under. 9-9, 9-10 on the betting board. The Houston Astros are on the road. They're facing off against the Detroit Tigers as Captain Jack Flaherty is on the bump for Detroit. Spencer Arrighetti, Mom Spaghetti, is on the bump for Houston. 8.5 is a total. Over and under, both at -110. Detroit is a pretty mid-sized favorite here. You're going to be getting them between -136 to a -145. +118 to a +126 is that number on Houston. And when it comes to the Astros, I saw them at a +145 For Spencer Urquidy, the swing and miss stuff is very solid for him, but again, he missed much of the season due to injury when he has actually been out there on the field for the team. It's been a little bit rough for him. He's got a 6.38 ERA across four starts. Last two starts back have been less than clean. He's been giving up over five walks per nine innings, so you have some issues there. And I recognize that Jack Flaherty certainly has had a lot of problems in terms of giving up hard contact. 4.76 ERA, mainly because he has given up 1.4 home runs per nine innings, but he's still getting 11 strikeouts per nine innings. 4.00 fielding independent. Now he has given up a grand total of 11 runs, 10 of which earned in his last two starts of that game against the Minnesota Twins and the Chicago White Sox. That's a little bit less than savory, but I mean, for the Houston Astros, I mean, what they did in their last series against the Orioles was very much less than savory as well. This has just been a strange team, to say the least. Jose Altuve is over 20 home runs. He's hitting a 280. Jeremy Pena coming back off the injury list, hitting above a 300 is solid. And while you've got Yunier Diaz along with Christian Walker, both supplying at least 16 home runs, neither of these guys are giving you too much on base. Like, Diaz is hitting a respectable 252, but just a 281 on base, with Walker closer to about a 300 on base. Victor Caratini is available about a 260, but I mean, they've had a few of these journeyman guys in the outfield, like Taylor Trammell and company, trying to step up. Just has not been working out there. And for the Astros, they do take a little bit of a blow with regards to their bullpen. They had Christian Javier only last a few innings due to illness, so their bullpen is very much used up for this one. So without Josh Hader, you're looking at Brian King, Brian Abreu, Bennett Sosa, Caleb Bort. These guys who have been able to give you sub 3 ERA to really step up. Sean Dubin is a relatively good long guy as well. But again, they did have to use up quite a bit of that bullpen yesterday, so that was a little bit of an issue for them. And then on the other end, you've got a Detroit Tigers bullpen that really, since the beginning of the month of June, this has been a bottom seven unit with regards to ERA. Tommy Canley has been absolutely terrible. Chase Lee has been having his issues as well. They've been trying to bring in some mix and match guys to be able to help out. Bailey Horn seems to be doing a pretty solid job for the team, but they had to use him up yesterday. You've been able to get some relatively good performances out of Will Vest along with Brian Herter, or give you a sub 325 ERA. And this continues to be a top eight team with regards to runs per game, as you have pretty much everyone on this roster hitting between about a 258 to a 260. Zach McKinstry, Wencio Perez, Riley Green, Gary Carpenter, Cole Keith. You just go down the list, and Carpenter's up to 21 home runs this year. Riley Green, he's been able to supply 28 bombs. He's hitting about a 265. Now, Spencer Torkelson only hitting about a 240, but in the on-base percentage closer to a 335, and he's been able to supply 26 home runs as well. So I do think that for the Tigers, they do a nice job of getting to Urquidy in a little bit of higher scoring game. I did semi total at an 8.8. I like the over, and for the Tigers, I'm going to be willing to lay up to a minus 145 on that money line. 9-11, 9-12 on the card. The Baltimore Orioles are on the road against the Boston Red Sox. Dustin May hopes that it's May Day for Baltimore, and it is Trevor Rogers on the bump for the Orioles. Orioles do find themselves as underdogs between even money to plus 112, minus 120 to minus 123 is that number on Boston. 8.5 to 9 is the total. On the 9, under is minus 120. The over is even. On the 8.5, the over is minus 120, and the under is even. I did sell my total at 8.2. I'm going to be one take shot on the under. Now for the Orioles, a nice eruption with their offense yesterday, but overall for the season, averaging about 3.6 runs per game away from home. That is last in the American League, but Trevor Rogers has been really good for the team. How about a 1.43 ERA thus far this season? Now, that should go northward. He's not necessarily too much of a supreme swing and miss guy. 7.8 strikeouts per 9 innings, but 1.9 walks, 0.3 home runs allowed per 9 innings. He has allowed 2 home runs in 69 and a third innings. Very nice there. And then for Dustin May, it does feel like he's starting to straighten out a little bit. He just has dealt with so many injuries that it's robbed him of a little bit of his swing and miss stuff ever since he has gotten to Boston. I mean, he's been okay in his last two starts, 9 2/3 innings, allowing 3 runs, 12 strikeouts. So, I mean, you do like to be able to see that overall for the season, 4.67 ERA, 4.48 fielding independent with about 3.5 walks for 9 innings. So he needs to tame that down. But this has been a Boston Red Sox bullpen that has been in the top 7 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Aroldis Chapman still giving you above 12 strikeouts per 9 innings. He has been absolutely incredible and ageless for the team. And then you've got the likes of Garrett Whitlock, a multi-inning guy that they had to use up yesterday, Justin Wilson, Greg Weisert, a lot of guys that will be able to go out there, post up a sub 325 ERA, even though the Red Sox don't necessarily have that one fearsome bat. They've got plenty of guys that they just find a way on base. Alex Bregman up to about a 387 on base. Rami Gonzalez is hitting a 295. Roman Anthony darn near 400 on base. Trevor Story, he's up to 19 home runs. He's hitting a 260. Wyler Abreu, he's wild out for 22 home runs, and Masataka Yoshida, since coming off the injury list. Ian Abraham Toro hitting about a 247. Carlos Zorvallez in that fold as well. So I'm just a lot of presentable bats. That 1-9, you really don't have any give up here. And on the other end, you've got a Baltimore Orioles lineup that has been able to get quite a bit out of Jackson Holliday along Gunnar Henderson. Both entered in the day yesterday with 14 home runs. You've had Jordan Westberg do a really nice job as well. He's up to 14 plus home runs. He's been able to do a nice job. Move a line, hitting in that neighborhood about a 275. You've had relatively good production since he came off the injury list from Adley Rutschman, as I know that it's been a little bit of a less than savory season for him and very much under the radar. How about Jeremiah Jackson being able to come in there hitting above a 300 as well? So some of these young guys are starting to step up, even though Kobe Mayo's not been one of them. And for the Orioles, this has been a bottom eight team in terms of their bullpen ERA, with having Felix Bautista on the injured list. That has not been great. And then you do have Cade Saud, who's been able to give you sub 350 ERA, but likes of Yennier Cano, Corbin Martin, Grant Wolfram posting up above a 4 ERA. That has been less than amazing. And on the other end, for the Boston Red Sox, I do think that they're going to be able to get a good enough start from Dustin May to get the job done. So I did set my line at a minus 134. I like the money line of Boston, and I'm in on the under semi total at 8.2. 913, 914 on the card. The Walker Texas Rangers are on the road against the Kansas City Royals, says Michael Walker. And if he has a bad performance, it's a dying Pac-Man voice of Michael. Waka, 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 waka. Goes for the Royals, and Jack Leiter goes for Texas. Nine is the total, over and under both at minus 110. And with regards to the Royals, they're between minus 124 to a minus 130, plus 110 to plus 115 is that number on Texas. And for Texas, I did set them at a plus 136, so I'm going to be 108 with the Royals. I recognize that for Michael Wacha, it's not like he's got supreme swing and miss stuff, and he's not going to be completely fooling guys or anything like that, but he just does a really good job in terms of not beating himself. For Michael Wacha, a 335 ERA, 365 fielding dependent, only about 6.6 strikeouts per 9 innings, but 2.4 walks, 0.8 home runs allowed per 9 innings, and he's allowed a combined 7 runs over the course of his last 5 starts, so he's been rock solid there. And then for Jack Leiter, it's a case where he's just giving up a few too many free passes. 4.6 walks per 9 innings. He's only giving up 1 home run per 9 innings. So 394 ERA, 443 fielding dependent. He's given up 200 runs or fewer in each out of his last 5 starts. But again, giving up at least 2 walks in each out of his last 5 starts, a combined 6 strikeouts in his last 2 starts. That's a little bit less than amazing, and he's won 5 innings or fewer in each out of his last 3 starts. Now, the good news is he's backed up by a Rangers bullpen that is one of the best in all of baseball. They're a top 5 team in terms of their ERA. Likes of Cole Wynn, Robert Garcia, Hobie Milner. You've got a lot of guys that are posting up a sub-3 ERA. And for the Rangers, since the beginning of the month of July, averaging about 4.8 runs per game. So they've been much more respectable with that regard. Corey Seager up to about a 360 on base since the beginning of the month of July. Over a 400 on base. Got Marcus Semien, who's now been able to hit 15 home runs. He, along with Jonah Heim, Adolis Garcia, Rowdy Tellez, a lot of guys hitting between about a 215 to a 230, but they've been much better recently. Getting Evan Carter off the injury list, give you about a 333 on base. That has been massive for the team as well. And then on the other end, you've got yourself a lineup that has been a little bit of a hush-posh as well with the Royals. They're currently averaging about 3.4 runs per game at home. That is dead sinking last in all baseball. Now, good news for the Kansas City Royals is that you've been able to get quite a bit more out of Salvador Perez. He's up to over 20 home runs, hitting about a 250, so that's something very encouraging for this unit. But that said, it's still a case where you'd need to get a little bit more out of the bottom of the lineup. Jonathan India hitting about a 240 with a single-digit amount of homers. Did go deep yesterday for his eighth. That's encouraging, but you need a little bit more there. John Rave hitting about a 220 has been rough. Jack Caglione is on the injury list, but that doesn't actually hurt the team at all. Mikey Strzemski about a 325 on base. Bobby Witt Jr., he's been able to give you 16 plus home runs, over a 345 on base. All those stolen bases is solid. And Vinny Pascantino, 22 plus bombs. He's been able to do a solid job as well. But the real intrigue for the Royals has been the bullpen, top 10 team with regards to bullpen ERA. You've got Carlos Estevez, Lucas Hirsch. Both of these guys being able to give you a sub-3 ERA. Also note that Vinny Pascantino did leave the game yesterday. Looked like it was more for heat issues, but now you have Hunter Harvey back on the injury list. Daniel Lynch, he's just off the injury list. He's been able to give you a sub-325 ERA in the bullpen. So, circumstance where I do think that the Royals do a solid job against the Rangers, and I think it's going to be another lower-scoring game out there in Kansas City. I set my total at an 8.4, so I hit the 9. I'm in on the under, and with the Royals. I'm going to be willing to lay the money line. Was willing to go up to a minus 136, 915, 916. On the card, the Toronto Blue Jays are on the road against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Paul Skeens goes for the Pirates, and Kevin Gausman goes for Toronto. And Toronto does find themselves as a very slim underdog, between plus 103 to a plus 110. Minus 113 to minus 130 is that number on Pittsburgh. 7 is the total. The over is minus 115. Under is minus 105. And for the Blue Jays, I did set them at a minus 104. I'm going to be willing to lay the money line. I recognize that Paul Skeens has been absolutely magnificent for the Pirates, a sub-230 ERA, giving up only about 0.6 home runs per 9 innings. He's getting over 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, giving up fewer than 2.5 walks per 9. But, I mean, it's just everyone around Paul Skeens that has not been able to do their part in terms of helping out, as the Pirates still dead last in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, measuring about 3.5 runs per game. They have three guys on the roster with over 6 home runs this far this season, as Tommy Pham has actually picked it up quite a bit. He's up to a whopping 6 home runs, and he's been hitting above a 260, so yay verily there. But I mean, Brian Reynolds, O'Neill Cruz, Andrew McCutchen, lone three guys on the roster with over 6 home runs, and Cruz is full of a cavalcade of different guys with he, Jared Trollo, Henry Davis, Jack Swinisky, Alexander Canario, only a 220 or lower. You just need to be getting more out of them. It's a Pirates bullpen that is relatively solid, even with trading away David Benner. You have the likes of Dennis Santana, Isaac Madsen, both give you a sub-325 ERA. You've had Colin Holderman have a really rough year. He's not been living up to his name, but he's still been able to get some good production out of Chase Shogart, a sub-375 ERA out of him. And then on the other end, it is a bunch in the Toronto Blue Jays that have seen a little bit of regression with regards to that bullpen. But still have the Killer Bees and Brandon Little, Braden Fisher, along with Yuriel Rodriguez, being able to do a pretty solid job. These three guys have been able to give you a sub-325 ERA. Sir Anthony Dominguez is not really a guy that I think is going to be able to elevate this bullpen, but they picked up Louis Varland at the trade deadline. He's been able to give you a sub-325 ERA this season. And for the Toronto Blue Jays, this has been a really rock-solid offense this season, albeit they've been much better when they've been at home rather than when they've been on the road. For the Blue Jays at home, they're right now supplying in that neighborhood about 4.3 runs per game. That does fall off to about 4.55 runs per game away from home, but Vlad Guerrero Jr. looking like the Vlad that we all know and love. 21 home runs, nearly a 400 on base. Bo Bichette hitting just below 300. He's up to 16 home runs. Edson Barger, George Springer, 18 and 19 home runs apiece. And Springer was dealing with a little bit of ailment and a little bit of the concussion IL, but he's back in the fold for the team. And Miles Straw's now giving you a little bit of production as well, which you like to see. And Dom Varsho, 13 home runs and 132 or so at bats thus far this season, has been solid. And for Paul Skeens, just not being able to be supported by the bullpen that he needs to, I think is going to be very costly in this spot. And I do think that Skeens is going to give you a really good start, which is why I did set my total at a 6.7. But I also do think that Kevin Gausman is going to be pretty solid here for the Blue Jays. I know that it's been a very up and down season for him, but overall for the campaign, though, Gausman has a 379 ERA, closer to a 381 field independent, 8.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's given up 1.2 home runs, 2.5 walks per 9 innings, and he's now given up 200 runs or fewer in 4 of his last 5 starts, 6-plus innings in each of his last 5. So I do like the Blue Jays on the money line up to a minus 104, and made my total 6.7, so I'm going to be riding with the under as well, 917, 918. On the card, the Philadelphia Phillies are going to be playing us to the Seattle Mariners, as it's old undecided. It was on the bum for Seattle, and Rangers Juarez is on the bum for the Phils. So this game is presently off the board, and it was looking like we should be getting Logan Gilbert in this ordeal, and if you do indeed get Logan Gilbert going up against Rangers Juarez, did have to set the Phillies as more of a mid-sized favorite. I did set them at a minus 123, so we'll be looking at a minus 122 or better there, plus 124 or higher in on the Mariners, and I did set my total at an 8.1 and 8 or less. I'm looking at the over an 8.5 or higher to the under. Now for Seattle, they have to travel after Sunday Night Baseball, but they are playing that game out there in Williamsport, so not the world's worst travel. They're still out there in the great state of Pennsylvania, so that is going to be able to help them out a little bit. And for Logan Gilbert, he has been able to really help out the cause of this unit, as I mean, the guy has just been getting strikeout after strikeout. He's posting up darn near 12 strikeouts per 9 innings, and if you look at Logan Gilbert and the way that he's been pitching this year with a 331 ERA, he's actually doing for his positivity with a 299 field independent, 1.2 home runs allowed per 9 innings. He has now given up 300 runs or fewer in 4 of his last 5 starts, 6 plus strikeouts in each out of his last 5. And for Ranger Suarez, you just fear that if he's getting hit a little bit, because he's very much a pitcher contact guy for Suarez as far as the season, posting up about 8.1 strikeouts per 9 innings, that sometimes you just see him get blown up a little bit. 328 ERA, 327 field independent, but has now given up 3-plus runs in 4 out of his last 5 starts, albeit this is a Philadelphia Phillies lineup that is much better at home rather than on the road. For the Phillies, this unit has been able to supply well over 5 runs per game at home this year, closer to about 4.2 runs per game away from home. Obviously, they were able to get online with their bats against the Washington Nationals yesterday, but you did see the bullpen get used up quite a bit. They had to go to Yoan Duran yesterday, as you've got he, Orion Kerkering, Tanner Banks, all three guys have been able to give you a sub-3.25 ERA, but Max Lazer has seen quite a bit of regression. Jordan Romano has been a big, giant disappointment for the team, but getting back to that lineup, it's been all about what you've been able to get out of Kyle Schwarber. He's been hitting some Schwarbombs this year with 43 home runs, above a 370 on base. Now, Bryce Harper up to 18 home runs, about a 350 on base. That's been rock solid. They need the bottom of the lineup to step up a little bit more, as Max Kepler has not been able to hit for any average whatsoever. You've been able to have Trey Turner be able to give you over 20 stolen bases. He's up to right around about a 290 average. Nick Castellanos, 16 home runs. Not hitting for a ton of on base at about a 290, but Alec Boehm is hitting a 280. JT Realmuto, who's been in and out of the lineup a little bit recently, he's been solid in terms of moving the line as well. And then for the Seattle Mariners, they might be a little bit tired after Sunday Night Baseball and all the festivities that go into that Little League World Series game, but you know what? You've got Eugenio Suarez along Big Dumper Cal Raleigh, two of the best home run hitters that you're going to find in all of baseball. As for Raleigh, he enters into yesterday leading the league with 46 home runs, right around about a 355 or so on base. J.P. Crawford has been able to give you a 355 on base. Randy Arozarena, 350 on base, 23 home runs. Obviously, Eugenio Suarez needs to up that average of a 235, but still 38 home runs. And then Ori Polanco, 18 home runs, hitting about a 240. You've got quite a bit of balance with this team, with Dom Canzone hitting about a 285. I do really like the Seattle Mariners bullpen. They've been a top 10 team in terms of bullpen ERA, as you've had the likes of a Edward Bizzardo, Carlos Vargas, Matt Brash, Gabe Spire, all be in support of Andres Munoz, with everyone except for Vargas being able to give you a sub-325 ERA. And I do think that for the Mariners, they're going to be able to get its good start of Logan Gilbert. And we're starting to see Ranger Suarez regress a little bit. So 8 or less looking at the over, 8.5 for higher, the under for the Mariners, plus 124 or higher, going to take a shot there, minus 122 or better looking at the Phils. 919, 920 on the card. The Chicago White Sox are on the road. They're facing off against the Atlanta Braves. Spencer Strider is on the bump for the Bravos, and Yandriz Gomez goes for the White Sox. White Sox are between plus 170 to plus 176 dogs, minus 194 to minus 205. That number on Atlanta, 8.5 is the total. The over is between minus 110 to a minus 115. Under is between minus 105 to a minus 110. If you're looking to lay a run half with the Atlanta Braves, that's at a minus 105, and I'm willing to go up to a minus 122 here. For Spencer Strider, he had a rough first 5 starts of the season. The team went 0-5 in those starts, but team has been able to pick it up ever since then. Now for Strider, 4.69 ERA. His last 2 starts have been disastrous, combined 13 runs allowed against the Mets and the Brewers, but this is a big giant step down in competition, and he does have closer to a 4.48 fielding dependent, getting 10.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. The 1.6 home runs allowed per 9 innings has been less than tremendous, but now gets to go up against White Sox team that's in the bottom 6 in the big leagues in terms of home runs on a per at-bat basis. Now credit to Lennon Sosa. He's up to 16 home runs. He's hitting about a 275. Mike Tauchman has been able to give you a 365 on base, and when Edgar Chiaro's been out there, he's been in and out of the lineup all season long. He's hitting about a 275, but there's just a lot of guys in this lineup for the White Sox that are holding up there under the bargain. Have a trio of guys in Luis Robert, Ander Benintendi, Miguel Vargas give you between 12 and 14 home runs, but I mean, just a lot of guys hitting a 226 or lower. Brooks Baldwin, Benintendi, who I mentioned before, Luis Robert, Joshua Palacios, Josh Rojas, all these guys are just really not giving you a lot in terms of moving the line, getting on base. Now, it's a White Sox bullpen that has been about league average with regards to their bullpen ERA. Mike Vassil has been used up quite a bit as a long guy, probably unavailable here, but he's been able to give you a sub-250 ERA. Steven Wilson has been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. Grant Taylor has been a little bit up and down. He's posting up about a 375 ERA. And then Brandon Iser, Jordan Leisure, they need to lower their north of 4 ERAs. But for the Atlanta Braves, they needed a lot of bullpen use yesterday because Eric Fetty, once again, did not give you the start that he was hoping for. You've had Raisio Iglesias, Aaron Bummer be a pair of guys posting up above a 380 ERA. But so you've had Dylan Lee, Desbel Hernandez, Pierce Johnson all be able to give you a sub-275 ERA. So they've been able to do a relatively solid job there. And for Yandriz Gomez, they're giving him a shot to be able to start here because I don't think there's a lot of other teams that would be giving Yandriz Gomez a chance to be able to start. He's been a little bit of a journeyman over the last few seasons for Gomez. Overall for the season, a 5.56 ERA, fielding dependent between the places he's been, as this is team number three for him overall this season. More on to 532 as he is giving up about 5.5 walks per 9 innings. Just not a great swing and miss guy, only about 8 strikeouts per 9 innings, so he leaves a little bit of something to be desired there. Probably not going to give you a lot of length, but I do think that the White Sox bullpen does a solid job here. So with the total at 8.5, I'm in on the under, and for the Braves, we'll delay up to a minus 122 on that run line. 921, 922 on the card. The Angels are going to be playing us to the Reds, as we're on to Cincinnati, and they're on to Brady Singer to have the Angels trying to sing the blues for them, and Victor Maderos is on the bump for the Angels. Relative pick'em game here, minus 105 to minus 110 on both sides. Solon's game is 9, the over is minus 120, and the under is even. And for the Reds, I made them a minus 134 favorite. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the money line for Brady Singer. I recognize that it's not been an amazing season for him, as his ERA is above a 4, but if you look at what he's done recently, Brady Singer has really been able to round into form. He's given up 3 earned runs or fewer in all but 3 out of his last 15 starts. 4.31 ERA compared to a 4.01 fielding independent. The 3.4 walks per 9 innings isn't great, but an 8.5 strikeouts per 9 innings is his average for his career. He's only giving up 1 home run per 9 innings, and he faces an LA Angels team that's very much an all-or-nothing team. At home, they've been a bottom 6 team in terms of on-base percentage, but they've been a top 6 team in terms of home runs on a per-at-bat basis. I mean, even Mike Trout has been able to give you 20 home runs this season, but he's been hitting below a .240 with regards to batting average, albeit closer to about a .360 on-base. Zach Neto has been really good, 20 home runs, hitting about a .270, and then Taylor Ward, 29 bombs. He's up to about a .320 on-base, but Joe Adell, once again, having a tough time being able to move the line, get on-base, 25 home runs, but about a .288 on-base. Logan O'Hoppe, .274 on base to go along with his 18 home runs. Jorge Soler has been dealing with injury. You've had just Luis Arnifo in general, not necessarily be too great. Racine Gustavo Campero has been hitting below a .200 as well. And for the Angels, this is a bottom 5 team in terms of their bullpen ERA. Just so many guys going out there, not getting the job done outside of Brock Burke and Kenley Jansen. Both of these guys, a sub-3 ERA, but then you've got Reed Detmers, Carson Fulmer, Ryan Zephyrian, Sam Bachman, a whole bunch of guys posting up an ERA above a 4-1. And for Victor Maderos, he made a start a few nights ago a little bit on the fly as Tyler Anderson was dealing with some back issues, and in 4 innings against the LA Dodgers, gave up 3 runs, gave up 3 walks. He didn't necessarily look too sharp there, and if you look at what Victor Maderos has done at the minor league level of the season, as most of his appearances at the big league level throughout his career have been long relief appearances, but when he was starting for the AAA affiliate for the Angels, 3.41 ERA, only getting about 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings and would give up over 3 walks per 9. Always has done a good job of being able to keep the ball in the yard, but for the Reds, even though they have been a little bit of an up-and-down team, they finally slayed the Brewers. Someone took them down, and for the Reds, L.A. De La Cruz has been rock solid for the team. 19 home runs. He's been able to give the team about a .350 on base. They pick up Miguel Andujar, who's hitting above a .300. Don't have a lot of power for the team, but guys moving the line. Kevin Lux, about a .360 on base. C.J. Friedel, .365 on base. Will Benson has not given you a whole heck of a lot, but that's why you've got Neovaldi Marte stepping up, hitting about a .295, and it's been about a league-average bullpen for the Reds. They did have to play back-to-back multi-inning games, but they got a great start of Andrew Abbott to be able to save quite a bit. That bullpen, Emilio Pagan, Tony Santian, have been able to give you sub .325 ERA. The Pagan did give up home run yesterday, so might not be able to have him go in back-to-back days. Scott Barlow's posting up about a .360 ERA along with Brent Suter, but do think that the Reds should have more than enough to get the job done here. We're willing to lay up to a -133 on their money line, and did somebody tell at an 8.6, so here at the 9, I'm going to be taking a shot on the under, and wrap things up with 923, 924 on the card. The Cleveland Guardians are on the road. They're facing off against the Arizona Diamondbacks. We do know that it's going to be Gavin Williams who's going to be on the bump for the Cleveland Guardians. As of right now, it's old TBD who's going to be going for the Arizona Diamondbacks, so this is a game that's presently off the board. Now, if you take a look at the ESPN projections, it should be Zach Gallen, and if you do get Gallen going up against Gavin Williams, set the Diamondbacks at a -118 on the money line. We'll be willing to go up to a -117 there, +118 or higher. Look at that, the Guardians, and then set a total to where a 9 or less. I'm in on the over 9.5 higher, the under. Now, if the Diamondbacks are someone other than Zach Gallen, I probably make them an underdog in this spot, and then a 9.5 or less to the over, a 10 or higher to the under. Not going to go too deep on Zach Gallen just because we don't know whether or not he's going to be starting or not, but if you do indeed get Gallen, 5.31 ERA, he's been giving up 1.5 home runs, 3.3 walks per 9 innings. This is not the Zach Gallen that we all know and love. And for Gavin Williams, he is a guy that is doing for a lot of regression. For Williams, he's got a 3.38 ERA, but closer to a .457 fielding independent. The 9 strikeouts per 9 innings is solid, but 4.7 walks per nine innings. I have no idea how he's been able to get out of all these jams, so that's something that I do think is going to be coming to a head. And even though the Arizona Diamondbacks do trade away some pieces at the deadline, Josh Naylor and Eugenio Suarez, still a top eight team in terms of runs per game. Blaze Alexander has been able to give you 333 on base. Recognize that Lourdes Gurriel doesn't have a great on base percentage, but 16 home runs, hitting about a 250. And then Corbin Carroll, he's been able to give you 4 home runs in the last 9 games. He's starting to look much better after he went on the injured list. Could use a little bit more out of the likes of Tyler Loeckler, Jake McCarthy, Jose Herrera. These are guys hitting below the middle sign of 200, so it's a little bit more of a bare-bones roster, but so have Geraldo Perdomo give you above a 385 on base. The big issue for this Arizona Diamondbacks team, it is the bullpen, as you've got a lot of guys that are posting up an ERA that is north of a 4. They had to use Jake Woodford as a long guy yesterday. You've had likes of Kyle Bacchus, Juan Murillo, Jalen Beeks, John Curtis with 2 S's, Andrew Hoffman, all these guys posting up well above a 4 ERA. And for the Cleveland Guardians, since the beginning of the month of June, this has been one of the best bullpens in all of baseball, even with Emmanuel Clase out of the fold. You've got likes of Eric Sabrowski, Nick Enright, who had a rough day yesterday, Cade Smith, Jacob Junis, being able to give you sub 350 ERA. Hunter Gaddis has been a little bit up and down this season, but he seems to be rounding into form as well. And then for the Cleveland Guardians, it is a bit of a top-heavy lineup, as Jose Ramirez, 25 home runs, 365 on base, has been solid, and Colin Zardo's starting to step up. 21 home runs, about a 325 on base. Stephen Kwan has been able to about a 280, but then just have a lot of guys towards the bottom of the lineup. They're not hitting well. Now, Bo Naylor did have 4 hits yesterday, but he's lumped into this as well. He, CJ Kafis, Wu Wilson, Lane Thomas, Austin Edge's backup catcher, David Fry, so many guys hitting a 215 or lower for this team, so it's an interesting circumstance. If you do get Gallen against Williams, 9 or less at the over, 9.5 or higher at the under. Anyone not named Zach Gallen, 9.5 or less to the over, 10 or higher to the under. And for the Diamondbacks, with Gallen on the bump, I made them a minus 118. They're an underdog if it's someone not named Gallen. For the Guardians, plus 118 or better, looking at them against Gallen, against someone not named Gallen, I make them the favorite. And that'll wrap things up for the Monday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. A big thanks to our good friend Ben Wilson, who does such great work here at VSiN, for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one or two ways to be able to further listen. First one is my Twitter /xtimeline at gunit_81. Keep in mind, letters CM, they mean does not matter, so per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. I'm with you guys every single day throughout the baseball regular season into the postseason. So I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.